If you open up your computer right now, or even just like the calculator app on your phone, and you type in 0.1 plus 0.1 plus 0.1, you would obviously expect the answer to be 0.3. I mean, it feels foundational, right?
Right, yeah, it's basic elementary school math.
Exactly. But if you actually run that code in almost any programming language, it doesn't give you 0.3. It spits out this messy, horrifying number. It says 0.3 followed by like 15 zeros, and then it ends in a four.
Yeah, the Phantom Four. It really is sort of the dirty little secret of computer science.
It's wild because the digital bedrock of our entire world, I mean, from the bank account you trust with your life savings to the algorithms guiding, SpaceX rockets, is at its core mathematically broken.
We definitely view computer arithmetic as this cold, hard, infallible thing, like a binary bedrock, you know, right or wrong, no gray area. But under the hood, if you really look at it, we're dealing with a mathematical landscape that is surprisingly fragile.
And that fragility is exactly what we are tackling today. So, welcome to the deep dive. Today, we're going to completely redefine what a number actually is. We're pulling from this fascinating theoretical text we've been reviewing. It's a file called RAMTheoryBook.md, and it details something called rational addition numbers, a theory of delayed collapse.
It's a great paper. Really shifts your perspective.
It does. Our mission today is to explore how forcing a computer to do math the way we usually do actually ruins its accuracy, and how borrowing a genuinely bizarre concept from quantum physics, this idea of delayed collapse, can't, well, it can actually save our digital infrastructure.
Which is a huge radical shift in how we approach computation. I
Yeah.
mean, we are moving away from thinking of numbers as static, frozen values, and we're starting to treat them as dynamic living states.
Okay, let's unpack this. Before we get into the whole quantum physics thing and breaking the rules of math, we need to set the stage a bit. When you and I, or really anyone listening, thinks of a rational number, we generally picture a standard ratio,
Right, exactly.
like a fraction, over $2, or maybe a mixed fraction, like a whole number plus a little bit extra on the side.
That's the classic definition, yeah. But the text we are diving into introduces a completely new architecture for this. It's called the rational addition number, or RAND for short. And it treats a number not as a single merged value, but as a distinct three-part state.
Three parts.
Yeah. In the text, it's written as Friel or Bell.
ABS, ASEOECC.
So it's basically three distinct variables just living inside one number.
Yes. And algebraically, that translates to ANR divided by BALRS plus a separate offset, which is theodollars. So the critical innovation here is that the fraction part, the overdollars, and the offset, the TSL, they're kept completely isolated from each other in the computer's memory.
Oh, I see.
They share a house, but they never actually interact.
They are like roommates who aggressively avoid each other in the kitchen.
Ah, exactly. That's a good way to put it. But before we get into why this three-part system is so brilliant, I want to play devil's advocate for a second. Why on earth do we need this? I mean, you mentioned the 0.1 plus 0.1 error earlier, but we have incredibly powerful computers now. Memory is incredibly cheap.
That is,
You
yeah.
have 64-bit, even 128-bit systems. So why go through the hassle of building a complex new architecture? Why not just, throw more decimal places at the problem until the rounding errors go away?
Right, that is a very common assumption, but it fundamentally misunderstands the problem with standard computer math, which is called floating point arithmetic. You
Yeah.
can't just throw memory at it because continuous numbers are infinite. And computer memory, no matter how vast we build it, is finite.
Right. Meaning you literally cannot store an infinite concept in a physical finite box.
Exactly. Let's go back to your 0.1 example. Computers think in base two, right?
Yeah.
Binary, zeros and ones. Our fraction, 1/10, is a base 10 concept. So in the binary system, 1/10 cannot be represented cleanly. It becomes an infinitely repeating decimal. It's exactly the same way 1/3 becomes 0.333, repeating infinitely in our standard human base 10 Mac.
Ah, okay. So because the computer's memory eventually hits a wall, whether it's at 64 bits or 64,000 bits, it is physically forced to just chop off the end of that infinite number.
It has absolutely no choice. That fixed precision format forces the computer to round the result. It just chops the end off, and that creates a microscopic error.
Wow.
And when you add those numbers together, those microscopic errors start to accumulate, which is exactly how you end up with that phantom trailing four at the end of your 0.3.
I love this because it highlights the blind spot so well. It makes me think of a physical analogy. Imagine you are at a huge train yard and you put a massive 10,000-ton steel freight train onto a giant industrial scale.
Okay, I'm with you.
And then right before you check the weight on the digital display, you gently toss a single pigeon feather onto the roof of the train.
That is the perfect way to visualize floating point limitations.
Right, because the scale's digital readout only has so many digits on the screen. It is calibrated for thousands of tons. So when it tries to calculate the total weight, it just rounds to the weight of the train. To the computer inside that scale, the feather literally ceases to exist in the data.
It's just gone.
Yeah, you could add 1,000 feathers one by one, and the scale would still just say 10,000 tons. It swallows the small data just to make room for the big data.
And this is exactly where the RAND system swoops in to fix the math. Hmm. In your analogy, standard floating point math tries to mash the train and the feather into a single unified number on that display screen.
Right.
But RAND acts as a redundant representation. It takes the feather and stores it as a separate numerator and denominator. That's the over dollar part.
Okay.
And then it stores the massive freight train as the offset the dollar part. By keeping them explicitly separated in this three-parameter state, the actual mathematical evaluation is intentionally delayed.
So it flat-out refuses to do the final addition. It just says, I am currently holding a train, and I am holding a feather, and I will not combine them.
That's the core of it, yeah. The text refers to this as redundancy. The RAND system isn't discovering some new magical integer. It's just a redundant way of representing the exact same numbers we already use every day.
Okay, I see.
But that redundancy acts like a protective shield. It stops the tiny details from being crushed by the massive ones.
Okay, keeping things in separate boxes makes sense conceptually. But eventually, you know, you have to actually do math with these things. Yeah. I want to ground this in reality, because if I'm listening to this, I'm definitely wondering how a computer actually prevents the feather from disappearing during a real calculation.
Let's walk through the exact phenomenon the text highlights. Numerical analysts call it catastrophic cancellation. And it is just as bad as it sounds.
Here's where it gets really interesting. I want to put this in a real-world context for you listening. Imagine we are forensic accountants, right? And we are tracking a missing dollar in a massive billion-dollar corporate merger audit. Walk me through how catastrophic cancellation destroys our audit.
Okay, let's set up the variables. Let's say your first account balance, we'll call it variable 6, is exactly $1 billion plus your tiny fraction, let's say 1 over 1 million. So some of it is a $1 million plus $11,000.
Okay, so that's our train and our feather. The billion-dollar corporate account and a fraction of a cent.
Right. Now, your second account balance, variable yaller, is exactly $1 billion, just the train.
Got it.
Now, as the auditor, you ask the computer software to subtract your sexness. You just want to find the difference between the two accounts, just 6 minus 2i.
Seems like simple enough algebra. I mean, the billions should just cancel out, and I should be left holding my missing fractional cent.
In a pure mathematical universe, yes. But here is what actually happens in regular floating-point computer math. Before it even attempts the subtraction, the computer looks at account $6. It tries to combine 1 billion and 1 millionth into a single fixed precision number so it can store it in memory.
Oh, no.
Yeah. The fraction is so microscopically small compared to the billion that it falls right off the edge of the computer's memory allocation. It gets rounded away instantly. So to the computer's memory, account $6 becomes just exactly $1 billion.
Wow. It just swallowed the missing money before the audit even started.
It did. So when you ask it to subtract, which is $1 billion, from $6, which it now falsely believes is also exactly $1 billion, the computer very confidently tells you the difference is exactly zero.
That is terrifying.
The tiny fractional data didn't just get distorted, you know, it was completely irrecoverably erased.
It's just gone. The math was fundamentally broken by the sheer scale of the numbers. So how does our three-part RAND system handle that exact same corporate audit?
Well, in RAND form, we refuse to force the combination. For account $6, we set up our parameters. So $6 is $1 million, and 6 bullies, the large offset, is $1 million. So $6 is stored as loon $1 billion goal.
Okay, so the billion and the fraction are in their separate, isolated rooms now.
Exactly. And account yet is represented as $1 billion. Zero fraction, $1 billion offset.
Makes sense.
Now, when you subtract them, the math happens entirely in this safe background parameter space.
Yeah.
The algebraic rules of RAND dictate that we subtract the SLR offsets directly from each other, entirely ignoring the fractions for a moment. 1 billion minus 1 billion is zero.
The huge numbers just cancel each other out perfectly in the background.
Yep. And the tiny fractional term perfectly survives, completely untouched by the massive subtraction that just happened, the result the computer gives you is exactly 1/1,000,000. Your missing money is found.
It's incredibly elegant. I mean, it's like filtering out the noise to hear a whisper. But zooming out, I mean, who actually cares about this level of obsessive precision? I mean, a fraction of a cent in a corporate merger might make an auditor sweat, but where does catastrophic cancellation actually cause, well, catastrophes?
The applications are actually vastly more critical than you might think. The text specifically highlights n-body simulations in physics, for example.
Okay, break that down for me. What exactly is an n-body simulation?
It's how physicists simulate the gravitational forces of multiple celestial bodies interacting over time. So if you are simulating the evolution of an entire galaxy over billions of years, you're dealing with massive distances between stars. Those are your giant offsets.
Right.
But you're also dealing with incredibly tiny gravitational perturbations, like the microscopic pull of a distant comet. And those are your fractions.
Ah, okay. So the freight train is a literal star, and the feather is the gravity of a comet millions of miles away.
Exactly. And in these simulations, every single position is calculated based on the previous position iteratively millions of times. If standard floating point math rounds away the tiny gravitational pull of that comet in step one, by step 1,000,000, your simulated planets are literally flying out of their orbits.
Oh, wow.
The errors compound exponentially. The universe just falls apart.
Because the continuous loss of feathers eventually derails the train.
That's a great way to put it, yeah. It's also vital for intricate geometric calculations in engineering or, you know, in global high-frequency trading. Quants on Wall Street are mixing massive billion-dollar principal accounts with algorithmic interest rates that calculate down to fractions of a penny over millions of trades a second.
And if you let those fractions round into zero, you are bleeding millions of dollars into the ether.
Exactly. You just cannot afford amnesia in your math at that level.
So this entire system relies on keeping all the possibilities open until the very end, of not forcing a final singular value until you absolutely positively have to. This sounds, well, it sounds suspiciously like physics to me. I mean, it naturally bridges us to what the text spends a significant amount of time exploring, which is the quantum analogy.
It is a beautiful conceptual leap by the author. To explain how RAN operates philosophically, the text introduces what it calls the delayed collapse paradigm.
Okay, I'm listening.
If you look at quantum mechanics, before a subatomic particle is observed by a scientist, it doesn't have a single fixed state. It doesn't have a specific location. It exists as a wave function, which is this rich, complex mathematical space of multiple possibilities all vibrating at once.
Right. It's a superposition. It is everywhere and nowhere simultaneously.
Exactly. And that particle only collapses into a single, definitive, measurable state when a scientist actually performs a measurement on it.
Wait, let me make sure I'm mapping this correctly. Are you saying that just like looking at Schrodinger's cat forces it out of a superposition and into a single state, either alive or dead, simply asking a computer for a final decimal value literally destroys the underlying mathematical structure of the number?
If we connect this to the bigger picture, yes. That is the exact argument being made here. The text shows that standard floating point math forces a measurement at every single step of a calculation, destroying the wave function constantly. But RAN preserves it.
Okay, the text lays out a very specific dictionary translating quantum physics into computer math. Walk me through that mapping, because I really want to see how deep this analogy goes.
It maps perfectly, honestly. First, the quantum wave function, that state of multiple possibilities held in superposition, is directly equivalent to the unevaluated RAN form, the other over dollars, plus seveners. It is holding multiple pieces of information, the train and the feather, in tension without forcing them to merge.
Okay, so the unadded fraction and the offset are Schrodinger's cat. What about the actual calculations? Like when we were doing the corporate audit, subtracting the $1 billion in the background, what is the quantum equivalent of that?
In quantum mechanics, the background evolution of a particle without collapsing it is called unitary evolution. The system evolves gracefully and predictably.
Okay.
In our math system, unitary evolution corresponds to the algebraic RAN operations happening behind the scenes. We add, subtract, and multiply the 8, Eder and Buller parameters, using strict algebraic rules, keeping the three-part structure totally intact.
And when the massive billion-dollar offsets canceled each other out in our audit example, leaving only the tiny fractional cent.
The text brilliantly links that to quantum interference. Just as physical waves in a pond can destructively interfere and cancel each other out to reveal a completely different underlying ripple, our large offsets cancel out in the parameter space.
Yeah.
This interference is what allows the fragile fractional data to emerge completely unscathed.
Which brings us to the final act, the scientists actually looking in the box.
Quantum measurement. In the RAND text, this is defined as the phi collapse map. The moment you invoke that specific function, you are opening the box to look at the cat. You force the computer to finally divide a dollar, add $2, and produce a single floating point decimal.
And the superposition is gone. The illusion is over.
It is entirely discarded. And the text emphasizes this heavily. In both quantum physics and RAND theory, the act of producing a single readable value discards a tremendously rich structure, a structure that could have been used for further exact calculations. By measuring it, you just ruin its potential.
So we are basically training computers to hold their breath, to carry this rich, complex, quantum-like state through thousands of calculations and only exhale, only collapse when we absolutely demand a final answer on our screen.
That is the ultimate essence of the delayed collapse paradigm.
All right, philosophically, this is stunning. But practically, I mean, computers are rigid, binary boxes. They are not fluid quantum realms. If there is a developer listening to this right now, how do they actually build this delayed collapse engine? Does the text actually explain how to hard code this into something as rigid as Python?
It does, yeah. It provides the actual implementation rules for an object-oriented language like Python. And it's surprisingly accessible. You don't need a quantum supercomputer. You just need to implement a specific class structure to trick the computer into holding its breath.
Okay, so how do we build the blueprint? We know we have to keep the train and the feather in separate boxes. That's step one, storing the dollars and key all the variables as distinct fields within the class so they don't auto-merge.
Right, that's your init function.
But eventually, someone is going to hit the plus sign on their keyboard. How do you stop Python from automatically mashing them together then?
This is where the engineering gets really clever. You use a concept called operator overloading. In Python, the underlying code for a plus sign or a minus sign is usually hard-coded to just add or subtract floats. But you can intercept those commands.
Wait, you literally rewrite the rules of what the plus key does on the keyboard.
Exactly. Mm. You hijack the basic math operations. So when the computer sees a plus sign between two RAND numbers, it doesn't do normal floating point addition. The code intercepts it and runs the algebraic formulas from the text instead.
Oh, wow.
So, for example, for addition, the new numerator isn't just a plus later. The code is instructed to calculate a dollar times the other denominator plus b dollar times the other numerator. It basically does cross multiplication on the parameters.
So the computer thinks it's doing math, but it's really just rearranging the uncollapsed state behind the curtain. It maintains the superposition.
Precisely.
Mm.
And that leads to the most critical part of the implementation, which is building the dot collapse method. This is the trigger. This is the only place in the entire code base where you actually give the computer permission to divide any dollars and add CLR. And it is only executed when explicitly called by the programmer.
You have to deliberately run that command to open the box. That is the only moment the feather is forced onto the scale with the train.
Yes. And the text also suggests an optional middle ground, providing a dot simplify method. This acts as a partial collapse.
What does a partial collapse mean in this context? Like peeking into the box but not opening it all the way?
Sort of, yeah. It's what the text calls the integer canonical form. So imagine you have a fraction that became 2/4 during the background algebra. The dot simplify method reduces that fraction to 1/2.
Okay, that makes sense.
You can also shift whole numbers out of the fraction and move them into the dollar offset. But critically, it refuses to turn them into floating point decimals. It tidies up the superposition, keeping the memory clean, without destroying the quantum state.
That is unbelievably cool. It's like doing housekeeping inside the quantum realm. So what does this all mean? If we zoom out and look at the whole journey today, we started with a frustrating but incredibly common computer rounding error. The fact that dropping a tiny fraction onto a massive number makes our most powerful machines essentially suffer from amnesia.
Right, and to fix it, we had to stop treating numbers as single monolithic points on a number line. We had to start treating them as three-part systems, separating the massive bulk of the number from its microscopic, fragile details.
And by doing that, by isolating the data, we ended up applying the philosophical framework of quantum mechanics, the idea of delayed measurement and preserving wave functions, to standard, everyday arithmetic.
Which brings us to a really profound conclusion from the text. It states that a number is not merely its value. A number is its value plus the structure that survives collapse. the representation itself, how the number is actually held in memory, dictates whether a complex calculation succeeds or catastrophically fails.
It's an entirely new ontology of numbers, which leaves us with a truly mind-expanding final thought to chew on. Toward the end of the text, the author hints at future generalizations of this math, things like probabilistic RANs and matrix RANs. The author suggests that these Atalar parameters don't even have to be static integers. They could be random variables.
Which is wild. This raises a massive question about the future of computing. Because if the parameters inside the RAN are random variables, then when you finally call that dot collapse method to measure it, it doesn't spit out a single definitive number. It spits out a probability distribution.
Which is staggering to think about. If the basic building blocks of our code can exist in a state of delayed quantum-like superposition, holding infinite probabilistic states rather than fixed digits, well, what happens if we build entire artificial intelligence models or massive global economics simulators on these uncertain states? Will our future algorithms essentially become living, breathing quantum entities just waiting in the dark for us to observe them before they finally decide what reality is?
It certainly makes you look at a simple calculator differently. I mean, the math we trust every day is just one way of observing the universe.
It really does. Next time you pull out your phone to split a dinner bill or calculate a tip, just remember, underneath that glowing digital readout, there is a delicate, invisible structure, a massive freight train, and a single tiny feather just waiting for you to hit the equals button and force the collapse.